This episode of the Star Wars Report podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at patreon.com/StarWarsReport. They're supporting us there, and you can too, and get some cool bonus content along the way. Check out all the latest awesomeness over at patreon.com/StarWarsReport. That's patreon.com/StarWarsReport. Coming up on this episode of the Star Wars Report podcast, it's my full Blu-ray review of The Force Awakens, Vanessa Marshall, and Rogue One. Let's do it! Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Star Wars Report podcast. So glad you've decided to tune in. Good morning. Good afternoon, good evening, please delete as appropriate. I'm your host for this week's episode, Riley Blanton. Good times to be had, good times to be had by all. Mark is out this week. He is traversing his way to the great Emerald City, to Seattle. So I am sort of flying solo. Because we still have an absolutely jam-packed episode, because literally as I sit down and I'm recording this, I'm waiting for a phone call from the good folks over at Lucasfilm, and we're going to be doing an interview with Vanessa Marshall, the voice actress behind Hera in Star Wars Rebels. That's coming up, as well as an interview that I actually did earlier in the week with Kevin Reitzel, who I saw a couple weeks ago when I went out with Bruce Gibson here in the local Atlanta area and saw The Force Awakens for my 8th time, his 17th. And by now he's seen it 30 times in theaters. So now that we've sort of rung in the Star Wars Force Awakens Blu-ray, and it is here, and we can now watch it in the comfort of our own homes as many times as we like without paying for the $8 popcorn, I wanted to kind of cap off the theatrical era of Star Wars The Force Awakens. So like I say, an absolutely jam-packed show for you guys this week. I'm going to say, because of so much, we're going to get to feedback, but it's going to be next week. So in the meantime, if you have emails, thoughts, questions, concerns, you can email us, starwarsreport@gmail.com. We're actually going to be doing some of those next week. But right now, I actually wanted to talk a little bit. I'm going to touch on Rogue One a little bit, but mostly I wanted to talk to you guys about the Star Wars The Force Awakens on Blu-ray. That's how I kind of want to start off the show, because everyone's talking about the Rogue One trailer, all the breakdowns and everything. I have a few thoughts. I'm not sure if they're going to be popular ones. So I'll kind of tease them here, and then once we get Mark back in studio, we'll really give it a proper go over ourselves. But let's start with the Blu-ray. So The Force Awakens Blu-ray came out this past Tuesday. The fine folks at Lucasfilm were kind enough to send us an advance copy. I, of course, went out and bought another one for myself because it's a sickness and it's a problem. Hey, but it's not that bad of a problem. I only got one edition. I ended up getting the Walmart BB-8 edition instead of, like, what is it, all five. Like Nathan Butler over at Beyond the Films. Craziness. There, as often is the case with Star Wars on home video, there are tons of various versions and cover art and a little bit of bonus content in the Target version, all that stuff. I just chose the one that I liked the packaging most, because they all had pretty much the same, you know, the same bonus content. But just like you, for these past few days, this past week, I've been voraciously consuming all of the bonus content on the recently released Blu-ray. And in fact, it's funny because when it comes to special features and home video releases, Star Wars has kind of a rocky history, both in terms of changes that are made and in terms of like the amount of versions that have come out. I'm of the school of thought that if people want to buy it and there's demand and they want to put it out, put it out. So I don't mind them having the various variant covers and maybe a little bit of bonus features here and there, because if I really want it, I'll go out and buy all the different versions, you know. So I'm of that mind, you know. I know some people are a little bit irritated about it, but But like overall, when it comes to the quality of the presentation of the film, of course, as you would expect, it's absolutely gorgeous. It is a beautiful, pristine presentation. In fact, if you have a decent home theater set up, the experience, I've said this before, but the experience is probably even better than the theater. And you don't have to pay for the $8 popcorn, which is always nice. So that is, of course, as expected. Interestingly, no commentaries, which I thought was an odd choice. But, of course, it's a 3-disc combo pack. Includes the actual main Blu-ray disc. The DVD, for everyone who's still living in 2006. And a third Blu-ray disc, and that's the one I'm going to talk about mostly today. That's the set of bonus content. That's the entire, the entirety of all of the bonus content was in that one particular disc, and that's really the one that I think everyone's been focused on, particularly the documentary. In fact, let's just get straight into it. Like, there is one reason, primarily, that you should buy this, besides just owning it, all the obvious stuff. The one reason why you, as a Star Wars fan in the digital age, should have a copy of the Blu-ray is the documentary, The Secrets of the Force Awakens, A Cinematic Journey. Man, I've been clamoring for this kind of access in bonus content for forever. I remember watching the documentary on Episode 1 that came out with the Episode 1 DVD, and it was so amazing to walk through the entire production process and get such an inside picture on the overall process instead of getting too nitty and gritty. And that was kind of the fault of the episodes 2 and 3 bonus features, is that they're just kind of, unfortunately, they're just kind of there. There was a series of webisodes that were published with episode 2. You had sort of the anatomy of 30 seconds or whatever it was for Revenge of the Sith, where they kind of analyzed everything that went into one particular sequence of shots. And those are cool, technically speaking, but I'm interested in the story behind the story. So I think this documentary was appropriately titled when they say Secrets of the Force Awakens. I'm sure most of you guys have seen it, and I guess you can't really spoil a documentary, but it's amazing. It's divided into 4 chapters, and it offers an insanely in-depth look at the entire production process. That's the key. The entire process. It kicks off with the in-depth interviews with the likes of Kathleen Kennedy, J.J. Abrams, of course, the cast and crew, and it really gets a insider glimpse at the entire process with the audition tapes, the pre-production art phase, the construction of the creatures, and of course, the really kind of penultimate final chapter covers the tragic moment of Han Solo and the entire process of bringing that to life, or I guess we're bringing his character to death. And it's just really, really well done. What really surprised me is how much access they do give us as Star Wars fans into the writing process. And it's a pretty raw and honest look at some of the difficulties that come with revisiting all of these beloved characters all these years later. I think one moment in particular that jumped out to me was how Carrie Fisher had really struggled at first with transitioning back into the role of Leia. And they showed it. Like, they were honestly showing her kind of messing up lines, having to restart it. And you just see sort of J.J. Abrams' touching care and understanding and sort of laid-back directorial process that really allowed her the freedom to really do what it took to really get back into the character of Leia. And I really appreciated that. They could have polished it up a little bit more. And they did do a little bit of polishing, a little bit of whitewashing. But we'll get into that in a second. And of course, seeing Mark Hamill talk about the final scene and how to really bring the mystery of Luke Skywalker to life and show so many conflicting emotions all in just one shot and how difficult that was. And of course, let's get straight to it. Harrison freaking Ford. God bless Harrison Ford. The man, I had a lot of respect for him before this movie, I got gained a lot more respect for him throughout the process of his public PR tour promoting The Force Awakens, and how much he was willing to play along with people like Jimmy Kimmel. But now, just seeing him in this documentary, that's really, honestly, the best part. He gets Han Solo. And that's such a relieving thing to see in this documentary. I dare say he gets him more than a lot of fans do. At one point in the documentary, he spoke directly about having to have, you know, the character of Han Solo die to add weight to the story and a sense of personal sacrifice. And that's something that we've heard him lobby for a long time, but to actually see him communicate that in the documentary was really, really refreshing. And, you know, I was just so pleased to see him take on that role. And it just, there is this sort of weight of responsibility that you can tell was felt by everyone in the creative process of this film. And it is tremendous that, you know, this dynamic cast of characters on the entire production team is able to put together the film, that they do. I will say this, probably the single issue I do have, with the documentary that I feel like maybe a slight missed opportunity is really going all the way there in terms of like some of the difficulties of the production process. They kind of gloss over the Michael Arndt to Lawrence Kasdan and J.J. Abrams writing process and how that changed. And, I'm sure there was some behind the scenes stuff going on there. And they kind of, they entirely skip the whole hydraulic door dropping on Harrison Ford. But that might be an ongoing like legal issue or something. I'm sure it's the kind of thing that would have been. I would be personally fascinated to see how the production reacted to that and how they had to reschedule shooting and all that sort of stuff. But I can understand why they wouldn't put it there, and it might be the kind of thing that would be good for a kind of behind the scenes book. You know, a few years down the road, if you know J.W. Rensler wants to do something like that. I think that would be amazing. But that's not just the only thing about the Blu-ray. That's the main thing. That's the reason you should get it. But it, of course, it does feature five other featurettes, including The Story Awakens, The Table Read, which is, you know, five out of five, I'd say. Crafting Creatures, 4 out of 5. Blueprint of a Battle. That was pretty interesting. If you're interested in the technical aspect, I'd say 4 out of 5. ILM, The Visual Magic of the Force. Another 4 out of 5, but the other really strong one was John Williams, the Seventh Symphony, because the fact that at 84 years old, John Williams is still able to put such enormous effort, heart, and joy into a Star Wars score, it's just absolutely awe-inspiring, and that you get to see hands-on in this feature. So it's a great privilege to kind of witness that process. They touch on it in the other documentary, but they really dig in on the Seventh Symphony piece. So overall, it's every bit I was hoping for as a Blu-ray release. It's a little light in deleted scenes. That was there were very few. Nothing really too surprising there. You get to see Kylo Ren stepping on board the Millennium Falcon. That's pretty cool. And you see a few other small moments, but nothing too essential. But, you know, some cool moments. So I'm very pleased. It's everything I would hope for. And there's certainly enough room. I'm sure there will be future, maybe more definitive or more diverse content available in future releases. But that's because that's the nature of the beast. So I say go buy it. Go buy it now. It's the Star Wars The Force Awakens on Blu-ray. And that's my review.
This is the Star Wars Report Podcast. John Williams is the man.
Yes, he is. Dum, dum. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It is the Star Wars Report Podcast. Let's get into this Rogue One trailer. Okay, so these are going to be very, 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 very much perfunctory thoughts. I have, in fact, I didn't even take. I as you guys could probably tell, I did take like proper notes for the Blu-ray review to really do it justice. I've honestly not done so for the Rogue One trailer. And it's because I have mixed thoughts. But I'm nothing if not honest. So you guys can help me out and send me an email based on your thoughts, too. And we'll bring in some more folks next week to really dig into it. I liked it. It was really cool. It was everything I expected. That might be the problem. But we'll get into that. I'll start with the good, though. It was really visually very, very fascinating. It had a very sort of war movie aesthetic to it. I really enjoyed seeing the Death Star under construction. I absolutely loved the character design of Felicity Jones, and then all of the sort of outside interactive characters who I couldn't tell you all the actors' names off the top of my head, but who will probably be involved in some way, including, oh yeah, Diego Luna's character, aka hashtag he's Biggs. No, he's not. Maybe he is. Who knows? I really liked the aesthetic. I really liked seeing AT-AT walkers, the original trilogy troopers, seeing the bucket heads from A New Hope on the Tanna 4. It was really fun to watch. In fact, we screened it in front of my AS class of fellow ROTC cadets, and an overwhelmingly positive reaction. Everyone's very much intrigued. But I'm just going to put out, I think, two missing pieces. One's purely technical. One is it's sort of assumptive. It kind of assumes you know what the film's about. And it's a teaser. It doesn't have to tell you everything. But my standard when it comes to great teaser trailers is Guardians of the Galaxy. Because I knew nothing about Guardians of the Galaxy when I watched the trailer. By the time I watched the trailer, I have a general idea of what the movie's about, and I'm sold on that concept. Like, it's a band of misfits. You got Star-Lord, a former, you know, criminal. You got this lady warrior. You've got Groot, the semi-talking tree. You've got, you know, the definitely talking raccoon. They're funny. These are their personalities. It's sort of a showcase of what's great about the film. And this trailer's just, it's gritty, man. It's dark. And here's the difference between this teaser trailer and the teaser trailer for The Force Awakens. The difference is this sentence: there has been an awakening. The first sentence in the very first teaser trailer to The Force Awakens alludes to this mystery, this thematic overarching element of the film that holds true all the way through to when you actually walk out of the theater and you've seen it. The Force Awakens. And you don't really get that thematic clarity. But for me, the one character you have a connection to is Felicity Jones, because you get a little bit of a sense about her and how, you know, her parents were killed and she has this big rap sheet. And this is a rebellion, isn't it? I rebel. And that kind of as the introductory line to her just kind of fell a little bit flat for me. I'm not going to lie. But I mean, I did like it overall, but I just watched it that first time and I couldn't help but feeling it's not that I need to know more about the film to enjoy it, but I feel like there could have been a little bit more of a hard pitch for like who these characters are, what their motivations is, and they don't actually explicitly state in the trailer what her mission is. And I feel like if there was just a little bit more that pointed to, and now you're going on a heist, because they definitely allude to it. And most people could probably get that sense, but I think they could have been a little bit more overt. Like, absolutely solid trailer, but I think there's still some missing pieces. And of course, I'm sure we'll get a little bit more once the full trailer is released. And I've only had the chance to see it a few times, and I'll really go through like shot by shot soon. And in fact, Darth_Hound, you can follow him there on Twitter. He wrote a great piece for us breaking down this trailer shot by shot. And the reaction, I'm the anomaly. I am outside the norm. I fully understand that. The reaction to this trailer has been overwhelmingly positive. And I'm sure a lot of that does come from the enormous amount of purely earned goodwill that Disney and Lucasfilm have. People are definitely in on the on Rogue One, and that's sort of the sense I got from the general reaction on Twitter. Is the I'm in or I'm sold? I sort of feel like they did a good job of selling the aesthetic and setting up this film apart from the main saga films, particularly with the design of the Rogue One, A Star Wars Story aesthetic as well. So I'm anxious to learn more about Jyn, about Felicity Jones' character, and what her motivations are, and her personality, and how she interacts with the newly forming rebellion. It struck me as odd, and I'm excited to learn what happens here. How, like, Mon Mothma's giving her crap for having a criminal rap sheet when they're the ones who are criminals because they're rebelling against the Empire. I thought that was kind of funny. So yeah, that's my just kind of initial thoughts on the Rogue One trailer, and we'll get to it more in depth next week. And now let's get ready. Let's do our interview with Vanessa Marshall. Vanessa.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, how are you?
I am doing fantastic. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Perfect.
I hope you can hear me too.
No, you're coming through loud and clear. Commander Hera, I should
Perfect.
Say.
Perfect.
No, thanks so much for coming on the Star Wars Report, and it's so good to talk to you and get to know you a little bit better here on the program itself. We've been longtime fans of Star Wars Rebels. And it sort of feels like a few significant things happened there recently. But I'm just thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. I'm honored, and I'm so glad to hear your voice. I miss you.
I know.
You're awesome.
Oh, thank you. You're too kind. When last we spoke, I want to say it was, yeah, Dragon Con.
Where fantastic. Yeah, you did a great job.
Oh, well, I mean, it was certainly a once in a lifetime opportunity for me. And we shared the stage briefly as we got to. I really kind of feel like we were both just kind of in awe of Peter Mayhew for the entire time.
Pretty much. Yeah.
But you were so, like, just to offer the listeners of the Star Wars Report a little bit of perspective, you were so kind and so generous with all the fans. We're going to get into Star Wars Rebels. We're going to get into, you know, like, some of the acting process. I'm very curious to hear a lot of the creative stuff behind the scenes, that sort of thing. But I just want to talk to you a little bit, as a Star Wars fan, how has that informed your more or less bombastic entry into the wild world of Star Wars that you've now been a part of since Star Wars Rebels began?
Well, here's the thing. I'm an only child and a bit of a nerd. And, you know, it's not that I don't play well with others, but I love to read. And I used to go to movies by myself in high school. So I guess you could say I was kind of a loner. And so my love of Star Wars has been a very sacred, personal, private thing that I didn't really understand that this is a, I mean, of course it's a worldwide phenomenon. I get that. However, I didn't realize that we could all discuss it so freely and cry together. <You know? laughs> And so when I got on social media and Facebook and discovered, oh my gosh, all these people who completely understood what I was talking about, I had this feeling of sort of, where have you been all my life? You know, I feel like I was partially alive. And then, being introduced to the community, it was like I came out of hiding and into a magical kingdom of rainbows and flowers and candy and lightsabers. So I've sort of gone from a very private love of the saga to sharing it with many people whom I would call my friends before I call them my fans. I feel so deeply understood by them. There's just, I feel like I at the gym this morning with a Millennium Falcon shirt. And as I do, I said, yeah, buddy. And I turned around. He thought I was insane. I turned around and I showed him my stormtrooper jacket that I had on, of course. And he went. Then he, you know, stopped being so cautious. He was like, "Oh, okay, I didn't know what you were talking about." And then suddenly we were best friends. You know, it's everywhere. And yeah, I don't know that playing Hera busted that wide open as much as social media. Really, I went from having no friends to having tons of friends. I mean, not that I had no friends. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, but it is. It's such a communal experience, and it's something that's been so energized because of every aspect of the franchise that has expanded so much. And Rebels has been such an integral part of that. Talk to me a little bit about what that process was like when it comes to first joining the community and how that's kind of changed you as an actor when you're portraying a beloved character that's become so quickly beloved, like Hera. How does that, both as a performer, but as, you know, just sort of a community member, factor in?
Well, it's interesting. I think it's some of the best writing I've ever read. And so I also love to write. Like I said, I love to read. So when I see it on the page, it's sort of a three-part experience for me. First is reading it on the page and being blown away and wondering, how did they ever, oh my goodness, the economy of language, it's brilliant, right? So I have my own version of it that I see, as one does when they read literature. Then I go to a record session, we say these things out loud, and then other actors bring those words to life, and then I have yet another experience that I imagine in terms of what this looks like. And then when it comes out and we're live tweeting as family online, I am freaking out because what I witness is unlike anything my mind could have ever conceived. And I am absolutely floored by the work of Lucasfilm. And I cannot say enough about how brilliant all aspects, from music to, you know, the art, the color, the effects, everything is so completely perfect that I forget I ever read anything, ever heard anyone say anything, and I have no clue what I'm looking at. And as a fan, I am able to freak out. And I know that I hear my voice intermittently, and I'm kind of like, okay, so that's weird. But within the context of this whole new world that I get to really soak in, it's so new to me that I forget I even had anything to do with it, oddly. So that I, too, am freaking out with fans/friends online because it is just so magical. And, I mean, I hope it doesn't sound like I'm sort of bragging on myself. I'm not saying, like, I'm so amazing. Actually, I'm trying to say that it's so good what they do that I don't even remember. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Enjoy it as a fan. It's insane. Like, yeah, Freddie was funny in the record, but when he says, "This is my funny face" or whatever, and I see it, I'm dying laughing. Well, who could have known that would be so hilarious?
And here's what's so unique about specifically Star Wars animation, and it started with the Clone Wars, and it's carried through, I dare say, even more so in the world of Star Wars Rebels, and that is there's a care and a team effort that comes across to the fans just as we watch it, as we see the final finished product, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, the score, the animation, the voiceover work, the banter back and forth. But that's only the first part, Vanessa. The second part to that is that you guys are all very visible and active in the community. And that's something you don't have to be, but that's something that I get the sense that you guys kind of are intentional. Are you guys, as a cast, sort of, is that a group process as sort of representing yourselves as a unified front with the community? Is that something that you guys always like to do?
Well, like I said, it's something I wasn't really familiar with until now. And I kind of think everyone feels the way I do. I mean, maybe some people are more private than others, but we're so blown away that we have anything to do with this to begin with. You know, we're so happy to be involved that I think everyone has sort of a jolly, humble attitude about it, and we're freaking out as much as anyone.
No, absolutely.
And that's authentic. I don't think it's like we don't have a group huddle where we're like, okay, you're going to handle, you know, it's born out of the love that we have for what George Lucas initiated, and it's something that enriched everyone's, well, not everyone's childhood. Meaning, you know, the movies came out at different points in people's lives, but surely impacted all of our lives at some point, to the extent that we want to talk about it endlessly online.
Well,
and I think we do, you know.
Yeah, no,
we did not plan that.
Exactly. As a huge fan of Star Wars, there's nothing more hilarious than seeing Sam Witwer and Freddie Prinze Jr. going at it on Twitter, giving each other crap one blinding the other. which is just great.
See during the record session.
I was
Sam
going to say, so
be,
is that sort of, a, no, I'm imagining, just in my head.
That's Sam's in the room where Filoni and everyone else is. We're behind the glass. We've got microphones in front of us. We can't hear what they're saying. For all we know, we're like, get casting online. You know, we have no clue what's going on. Sam's throwing hand signs like we're on a baseball field. He's calling plays. He's throwing flags on the field. You know, and then and we have this joke like, okay, well, what would Sam do? You know, so that happens in real time, not just Twitter.
that's kind of what I got the sense of. At least I like to think that. That's so great to actually hear
it's
that.
Hilarious.
That's the sort of passion that goes into it. And then
when he leaves, we're like, no, because we want to know. Well, what would Sam do? Because he's so brilliant.
I mean, but anyway. But each of the cast, you guys each bring something that's so unique and colorful to each character in a way that the show really isn't formulaic. You're not going to get the same formula each week, and that's one thing I've really enjoyed. And when it comes to Hera, talk a little bit about what makes her unique. Particularly here in season two, because she's faced a lot of challenges. Particularly, I know everyone's talking about the most recent season finale, but the episode before, she was really kind of struggling with Kanan's sort of, I guess, conflicted future path.
Yeah. Well, I think at the beginning of season two, she sort of relaxed into the more organized militaristic structure that they had luckily sort of discovered. We met Fulcrum at the end of season one. Thank you for Ahsoka.
No.
And, you know, as she went along, she obviously got promoted and she got to fly a B-wing and she got to heal things with her father. And she also then, I think, toward the end of the season, that as we got stronger, the Empire got stronger, and these Inquisitors are coming, you know, faster. And you know, as Kanan says, like, we're not going to be able to protect them. They're going to have to go out and do their own thing. And I mean, Kanan and Ezra. So I think the stakes are getting equally as high on both sides. And she is now facing the stark fact that, you know, she may never see. I mean, when Kanan says, you know, don't worry, I'll see you again, I promise.
Mm-hmm.
That was so horrible because he actually will never see her again.
Wow, I hadn't even thought about it that way. That's so brutally poetic.
It barbecued my soul. Yeah, so I think she is thrilled for, you know, how much stronger they've gotten, but I think she's also intensely aware of at what cost she may lose her family, you know, the one that she's created on the Ghost. So it's sort of a bittersweet victory of sorts, and now here we are at the end of season two, and you know, there's so many questions. Where did Maul go? You know, is Ezra, what's with that red glint in his eye?
I know
Kanan can't see, you know. Rex, how can Rex function? You know, we don't know what's up with Ahsoka. I mean, there's just what there's so much going on.
I know that so many questions.
And I know everyone keeps talking about the finale, but and I just did too. But anyway, it's been quite a journey from the beginning of season two, and I'm very grateful that we had Rex with us.
You put it so well, because it is a journey, and it's opened up so many more questions than answers. And frankly, you know, as a fan, just for me personally, that's when Star Wars is at its best. That's when you want to know, what was the Clone Wars that Luke Skywalker's father fought in? What were those questions give you a sense of an expansive universe that I've really come to appreciate that Rebels has done such a good job of. As much as we all want to like mob Dave Filoni at Star Wars Celebration and tell just like give the briefing of every last detail, but that there's no fun in that.
Right.
No, well, I'll tell you what, I don't want to run out of time, so I want to touch base because our timing is somewhat fortuitous. I wanted to get Vanessa Marshall, the Star Wars fans, thoughts on the new Rogue One trailer before we roll out of here. Have you had a chance to see it?
Yes, I did have a chance to see it. I was blown away by it. I cannot wait. It's like here we are again waiting for December to come around.
I know.
I have a million questions, and I probably need to watch it 1,000 more times, right?
Yeah. There are so many. There are a lot of fans that are really hoping to see, in fact, probably one of the most prevailing theories of in terms of like cameos that people want to see, like, we want to see Ahsoka show up in Rogue One. And I just love that we live in that world where that's even a possibility.
Well, I mean, I love how Clone Wars opened up Revenge of the Sith for me. I love how it even impacted my understanding of Darth Vader in episodes 4, 5, and 6. And so for Rogue One to deepen my understanding of Clone Wars, the animated series, I love when that happens. For me, that's when the saga is most vibrant, is that I can then go back and rewatch all the Clone Wars and start freaking out all over again. I'm obviously thrilled that there's another strong female character. I love seeing that. And I'm very curious about her experience ending up in that Imperial outfit. I'm very intrigued to know what's going on.
That's the question. What will you do?
Wow,
One thing we know that Vanessa Marshall is going to do is she's going to keep voicing Hera in the amazing series Star Wars Rebels, and we're glued to the TV each week. It's going to be another long summer, Vanessa, but I can't wait for the season 3. Hopefully we'll get a chance to see even more soon.
They might be doing a marathon around May 4th.
Ah.
So hopefully we can tweet it out.
There we go. Absolutely. And if you guys, Vanessa, in fact, if someone's listening to this podcast and they're not following you on Twitter, they absolutely should be. Where do they go so they can get these awesome live tweets of the episodes?
Awesome. Yeah, my Twitter handle is @VanMarshall, all lowercase. And I'm on Instagram as Vanessa Marshall 1138. And Facebook, I guess, just search for me. I don't know. The URL is some obscure thing, but I'm there. So please come talk to me.
Absolutely. As Star Wars fans, that's probably the greatest privilege of our age, not just the amazing new films and television, books, comics, all the amazing things we have to consume, but we can actually interact with the people who the creatives behind all of this. That's what's such a great privilege. So make sure you follow her. It's @VanMarshall on Twitter. And Vanessa, thanks so much for coming on the Star Wars Report. Hope to do it again soon.
Thank you. It's so wonderful to be on. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. So they did, and we pay our respects to all. Wow, Vanessa was just an absolute treat. She's super nice, super cool, and one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. If you ever get the chance, if you're at a celebration or convention or anything like that, and you have the chance to say hi, do so, because she's just the nicest human being. That's all I can say. Ladies and gentlemen, but here we go. It's another segment of the show that I recorded last week, but I had to do it. I teased it at the top of the show. Kevin Reitzel, it's a longtime friend of the show, listener, super cool dude here in the Atlanta area, and I had the opportunity to go see Star Wars The Force Awakens many weeks into its release. I want to say this is back in February, probably. Myself, Bruce Gibson, and Kevin went and saw The Force Awakens, and it was my 8th time. I've now seen it a total of 9 times even in theaters. It was his 17th at the time, and now he has seen it 30 freaking times. And so I wanted to get his perspective on someone who's really had that much of a chance to memorize every detail. Like, is it different? Is his experience different? And he has some really interesting things to say. So without further ado, let's jump to my interview with Kevin.
Hello, hello.
What's up, Kevin? How's
it
going?
What's up, Riley?
Ah, not too much. Not too much, man. How's life going?
Going well, going well. Well, good to finally talk to you. I'll enjoy your show very much.
Oh, absolutely. It's good to talk to you, too. 30 times. It's hard to believe. What? When was it that Bruce and I and you were, what time was that?
I think that was around 17. I was approaching 20 at that time.
Oh, wow. Wow, so you've still been, and that was what, in last month, was it? March? February? No, somewhere in there?
I want to say February, I think it was.
I think, yeah, that sounds right. February sounds right. Guess what? We've started. Hey, here it is, folks. This is the Star Wars Report podcast. I just had to call this dude up because... he and I, as we mentioned, we had the pleasure of getting together back in February to see The Force Awakens, which was the last time I saw it, by the way, for my 8th time, as I recall. I think I'm getting these right. And it was your, like, 17th. And ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome him to the Star Wars Report podcast to talk about seeing The Force Awakens for 30 times.
30 times, yes. Nice round number. You know what? I wanted my 30th time to actually be with you. I was hoping you were going to go through with that live commentary where you're going to meet at the theater.
And then, boom, I blinked, and the Blu-ray's here. This is how fast it is. It's crazy, absolutely crazy. All right, well, let me actually give you the proper introduction. It's Kevin Reitzel. Did I get the last name right?
That's right. That's
yes.
right.
All right. Hey, first go. And you were on most recently, like you guys, if you're listening to the Star Wars Report network of podcasts, he was most recently on Cloud City Casino. But tell folks listening to Star Wars Report a little bit about yourself and the craziness that led you to see The Force Awakens 30 times.
All right. Well, before I get into that, my name's Kevin. I currently co-host a podcast with my good friend Kyle. We're on the, if you search us on fan places where you can get, the podcatchers, as they call
yes,
it. We're
yes.
on, we're obviously, fan pod. We're crazy, crazy, crazy about fandom. And so we started this podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network, where you can find us on Stitcher and iTunes and Podbean. And we have a main show there called Culture Clash. And then once a month, we do a show called Fandom Flashback, where we kind of cover a huge fandom thing of our past, whether it's on television, comics, cartoons, toys. Our last one we did was on G.I. Joe. And you can find me. I'm at Spartan_Phoenix on Twitter, and you can also find our Fandom Podcast Network at Fan Pod Network on Twitter as well. Huge Star Wars fan. Why did I see it 30 times? It's kind of a throwback to when I was growing up. I'm one of the original Star Wars fans. I was
OG.
Yes, OG. I saw Star Wars when it first came out when I was 6 years old. And it just like all of us around that age, very impressionable. It changed our life. And this was back in the day where my parents would drop me off at the theater with my friends on the first day of the showing, pay for us to get in and pay for us for to get popcorn and candy. And this was back in the day where you were allowed to stay in the theater all day. And we would just watch Star Wars over and over again, like on the weekends, and then sometimes after school. When the summer was over, and I don't remember how many times I saw it in the theater originally. I probably saw it over 100 back then, but I wasn't counting like some people were. And just being a huge Star Wars fan, I just absorbed it when Episode 7 came out, because it was new content, it was new material. And I kind of wanted to relive my childhood as well. And I kind of turned the many times of seeing The Force Awakens into a segment on our Culture Clash show. I'm getting love to the background characters, you know, some of the aliens that you saw only for a few minutes from time to time. So that's come in handy a lot. But I love Star Wars just like you do, man. And I just, the other thing about me too is I love the theater going experience. Mm. And I want to know as much as I can with any new material that comes out. And, you know, I can almost recite all the lines word for word by now.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, that's, I believe it. And we're going to really kind of take a few minutes to dig in. And that's why, like, I saw on Facebook that you had gone and that you're going in for your 30th round. And I thought it's so cool because that's something that I never really experienced growing up because, A, I'm kind of from the prequel era where that idea of a phenomenon of seeing a movie over and over and over again in theaters wasn't as much a thing because home video really wasn't – well, it wasn't a thing back in 77. And so it's – to me, it's really cool that you're part of that original generation that came to – that appreciated that sort of almost – communal pseudo-cultural experience, you know, that everyone talks about from 77. And I am eternally fascinated, just eternally fascinated by that era of, by that era of fandom and the original era. So walk me through a little bit, Kevin. Is like the repetitive viewing thing something that you decided to do with Force Awakens? Were you in up for round 30 of the Phantom Menace back in 99, or is this a relatively new thing?
No, it's not new. When Phantom Menace first came out, I was it's actually interesting. I was working for a company out of Virginia at the time where we were producing a Star Wars product. It was a Star Wars collectible card game. So I was part of the Star Wars fandom. I was working, and I was always traveling on the road at the time, and I was always seeing the Phantom Menace with friends of mine and people that was, you know, helping, you know, we had volunteers promoting the card game at the time. The company was called Decipher. It was out of Virginia.
Oh, yes.
And I had seen it so many times on the road and back at home when I got back to the office. I lost count how many times I'd seen it. I probably saw Phantom Menace definitely more than 30 because I was on the road for like 70% that year promoting the Phantom Menace product at the time. And you know, it had stayed around for a while as well. You know, back in Star Wars, back in the original Star Wars days, we were lucky that Star Wars came back into the theaters as well. And it was popular than it was because, you know, when you had the movie, that was it. You didn't have any other, you know, you had the comics when they finally came out, and then you had the toys, and you relived, Star Wars through those properties. And it wasn't like nowadays, you know, you get the video less than 6 months later and you can watch it over again. You know, video just didn't come out then until later. It wasn't available. And there was early Betamax and those, before Laserdisc, they had those big plastic discs with those special machines. And then VHS came out. It was a, you know, back when I was a kid, we would just, when it came back into the theater, we went back and back. And, you know, Phantom Menace was kind of nice because we were reliving it as well. And everyone was excited that there was new material.
So it's like, yeah, it's an ongoing tradition. And I like that. It's an ongoing Star Wars tradition. And I'll tell you what, I feel like this is kind of an integral part of the Star Wars experience that I am only just now beginning to appreciate as a fan because I was never a theater guy. In fact, we didn't go to movie theaters growing up, like even during high school. I think the first film I ever saw in a theater was in high school. We never went to the movies, A, because we grew up overseas until 9/11 when my family moved back from overseas. And then after that, it was probably 4 or 5 years when I finally darkened a movie theater. And that was back when one of the Narnia films was coming out. So it was like mid-2000s, somewhere in there. And I would never even dream of seeing a movie twice in theaters just because it didn't seem like a thing, right? And it really isn't anymore until, for me, the advent of the superhero genre. And I'll never forget, was it last summer, summer before? I think it was last summer when Guardians of the Galaxy came out. And it was such a fun romp of an adventure that the movie may not be Lord of the Rings, but I wound up seeing it and then seeing it with my with my sister Bethany, and then seeing it with some other family members, and then seeing it with a group of friends, and then seeing it with my dad, and then seeing, and then I realized, wait, I've been to the movie theaters 5 times, which was insane.
You're right about that movie. It it brought back that kind of Star Wars space adventure. It also hit everyone at a certain age, because you know you hit the people in my age when it was like reminding us of Star Wars and the music back then as
yep.
well,
because mm-hmm.
the soundtrack was straight out of the 70s. And then of course it hit all the younger generation as well. But it's interesting you say that you didn't go to the movies a lot, because for me, it's in my blood.
Yeah.
I've been doing movie marathons all my life, you know. And what's really funny is where when I was younger, you would sneak into go pay for a movie and you'd sneak into a bunch of other ones. Well, now they're officially sanctioned. You got all these superhero official movie marathons now.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, on my wall over here, I'm looking at all these lanyards where I have like the Batman marathon, the Avengers marathon, the Die Hard marathon, the Indiana Jones marathon, you know. And when Episode 7 came out, I did the 7 movie marathon straight mm-hmm. out at the gates there, up there in Atlanta. And then the next day I had bought tickets for 4 straight IMAX showings at an AMC. So I was out of the gate right there. I'd seen it,
in the
first 2 days I was seen it 5 times, you know.
That's amazing. Well, and I guess what this has made me think of is that there's a missing piece of the movie going experience, past of the great action films of the 70s and 80s that has been missing until recently. And it's really been, I think, something that Disney has done an incredible job of recapturing, the magic of going to a movie theater. And I think so much of the films that me and my family and friends that we go and see over and over again, whether it was Guardians of the Galaxy, or really I was a couple times on Avengers when Avengers first came out too. I remember that kind of being a thing as a kind of an early precursor. But I guess what it's just astounding to me how much that they've really brought that forward, and it was just made that much more clear and solidified as a phenomenon that's returned with The Force Awakens. Because as we speak now, right now, Kevin, we are 3.5 months into the release, and it's finally moving out of theaters in most major cities and moving into second run theaters, and now finally available on DVD and Blu-ray. As this episode airs, it's already available. So it stayed in theaters with a solid run, making money all the way through that time, week after week, month after month, just because it has such a rewatchability factor to it. And I'm so thrilled that that's something that is there, because even as much as I loved the prequels growing up, we never really watched them more than maybe a couple times a year. So it's just fascinating to me that this is kind of returned as a phenomenon.
Well, it's interesting. I'm proud to say that of all of my 30 viewings of Star Wars, I've actually have paid for each and every one of those showings. I didn't see something else and then sneak into Star Wars or something like that. I actually paid for Star Wars each and every time. So I feel I've contributed to the $2 billion or whatever that it's gotten already.
None of this paying for Deadpool, watching Deadpool, and then sneaking into another Star Wars show. Well, and what's funny, man, is that right now as I speak, in a handful of hours, I'm going to head out to our Dollar Theater here in Fayetteville and go see it with my sister and brother-in-law.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and it's going to make my 9th time now. And I feel like I need to make it an even 10. Like, I need to squeeze in one more viewing, like, Monday before the Tuesday release.
Well, I tell you, knowing that it came out on digital on Friday, and I saw it yesterday, I wasn't tired of it. You know, knowing that it's coming out for me, I'm getting it on Blu-ray on Tuesday.
Yeah, as am I.
I enjoy it just as much, knowing that I'm going to be able to see it on the small screen later on. But, you know, like I said, the theater going experience is something that I've always enjoyed. And it reminded me of people ask, you know, hey, wow, you've seen it that many times. And the question that I get a lot is, what was your best experience? What type of format seeing it do you prefer it in? You know, and I've seen it in IMAX. I've seen it in true IMAX. I've seen it in 70 millimeter IMAX. I've seen it in 3D, 2D. Even saw a really bad showing at another theater where the light was so dim. They had the house lights on, and I was like, man, you got to fix this. But, you know, and so I say, well, what's your favorite? I said, I say the couple times was the IMAX at the Mall of Georgia, because it's a true IMAX. The IMAXs that you get at like the AMCs and such, even though they are in an IMAX form, the screen is not a true IMAX. The theater setting is not a true IMAX theater setting. And then when I went to the Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville, Alabama, they have a dome IMAX, and they also have one in the Tech Center Museum in San Jose, California, that I also recently went to, in a similar type of dome IMAX as well. And those were both 70 millimeter. And those are treats, because I was told that in 70 millimeter, to see it in the original 70 millimeter, there's only about 15 theaters on the planet that show it that way.
Yeah, that's true. There were very limited availability of those. I never got to see it in that format. I'm pretty happy. I've seen it in most major formats, regular 2D, Real D 3D, IMAX 3D. And of course at the Alamo Draft House, which is kind of
I wish I could have seen it there. A friend of mine lives in Texas and saw it there and said it was a great experience.
Yes, yes. Well, let me pepper you with a couple quick questions before we have to let you go specifically. Having seen it this many times, I think you're uniquely qualified, before we all get our grubby hands on the on the Blu-ray release, is what small details jump out to you that you think people miss who've only seen it a few times?
Well, I'll tell you right now, I mentioned this in a Facebook post that it took me, I think, my 24th or 25th time to notice that Maz Kanata only has four fingers on her hand, not five. it's just little things like that, costuming details, characters in the back of Maz Kanata's palace, little details on the pilot's uniforms and
like
background,
the stormtrooper bumps his head type of details.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, too. My love for the movie has gotten me so excited. I'm going to Star Wars Celebration in London, and a friend of mine and I are going to take a quick little stop over in Ireland, and we actually have reservations to go to Skellig Michael.
Nice.
So that's another little thing, too. And like, you know, I recently noticed all of the puffin birds that are flying around in the background when you see Rey look for Luke Skywalker. And that's puffins, it's a bird sanctuary there as well. So, but yeah, a lot of those little details like that, you know, and little looks of, you know, the First Order officers in the back, and just a lot of that detail that I just soak up it all. And you know, I love knowing as much as I can about this movie. So, yeah.
It's interesting because my first viewings, especially as it was chronicled here on the podcast, was there. I felt sort of like that it was a little bit too scant on plot details. Like it was almost sort of like that they were afraid to get too political to explain like the situation of what Starkiller Base is and does, and what the First Order is, and what the nature of their relationship is with the New Republic and with the Resistance, and like how all of that worked politically. But as I think about it more and more, if you go back to A New Hope and you watch the first act of A New Hope, you don't see any presence of the Empire after the initial introduction of Vader as a villain. But for all you know, when you first watch that movie, that could just be Vader and a squad of rogue bounty hunters or something like that. Like they vaguely reference the political situation, but it doesn't matter. You don't need to know the nature of how the clone army fell and the CIS was destroyed and Palpatine rose and the nature of his relationship with Vader and all that background. You don't need to know any of that to be dropped into the middle of the story. And I really think that upon reflection and having seen it a lot of times, that is a positive quality that you, if you think about it, because we've had the opportunity to read the visual dictionary, to watch it over and over again, to really understand like who it was that was on the balcony when Hosnian Prime was destroyed. Well, like that's stuff that you don't have to know to enjoy the movie. But the more times you dig into it, the more, I guess, there is more layers of that onion you can peel back.
Oh, you're totally right. And that's an excellent point. And the one thing that we have with us nowadays that we did not have back in those days is that when a new movie comes out, yes, there's going to be many other things that are going to fill in the holes or the questions, whether it's books, whether it's visual dictionaries. You know, the company, the Star Wars trading card game company used to work for Decipher, we were coming up with official names for a lot of the aliens in the background in the cantina in Jabba's palace. It had no names. But now when you open when this movie comes out, every creature already had its name attached to it. And, you know, the political situation, a lot of people wondering, like, I wish I would have gotten that out of the movie. Well, we're going to get these out of books. That's what these comic books and these books are for. So that's a great point.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and I guess in a parting shot, if you were to having again seen it 30 times, there's a lot of background details and stuff, but I want to ask a more overall question. Because we've talked recently on the podcast a lot about ranking and ordering the film, or really like distilling why you like Star Wars in one sentence. But having, I think, seen it so many times, what is your overall opinion on how the post-Lucas Star Wars? I know this is a deep topic, but like, if you were to really fundamentally get to the core of what the biggest contribution of the post-Lucas entry into the Star Wars universe is, now that you've really, really had this kind of repeated exposure to it, what is that in your opinion?
I welcome it. I like new blood. It's the same reason why when Empire came out, I was glad that Irving Kirshner directed it. I think Irving Kirshner did something special for that movie than Lucas probably could not have done. I'm sure Lucas would have been fine. Same thing for Return of the Jedi, Richard Marquand. Of the original trilogy, Return of the Jedi is my favorite for many reasons. And I knew how passionate that J.J. Abrams was for this project. And I knew that he was going to give it his all. And I'm really, really happy for the new directors that are going to be stepping up for the new movies. That's what Star Wars needs. Star Wars can get in a rut, as we kind of saw a little bit with the prequels. George Lucas directed all of those. And as much as I love George Lucas and I love what he's done for this, I would have loved to have seen a different director for maybe one or two of those movies, you know, to kind of give it its own interpretation and give someone else, because people that are directing these movies, they love Star Wars. And I'm fine with it. I'm very happy with JJ. Where it stands in my favorite Star Wars right now, it's up there with Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens as being my favorite, with Empire Strikes Back right behind there.
Ah, interesting. Well said, sir. Well said. I think, and I couldn't agree with you more, especially after repeated viewings. I think that's so true, and it's so important to recognize the genius that came before, and more importantly recognize the platform, the shoulders of the giant that is the Star Wars franchise, that these new directors like Rian Johnson can now take the franchise.
I am so excited for his interpretation of Star Wars, because I am a huge fan of his movies.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Looper, and what else has he done?
He did Brick.
I've not seen Brick. Only seen Looper.
Yeah. It's kind of like a high school film noir with Joseph Gordon-Levitt as well. Kind of a whodunit. It's a really good film.
And he's involved with a number of Breaking Bad episodes too, as I understand.
Yes, yeah. He directed some of the best episodes. Yes.
Wow. So yeah, between him and, of course, episode 9 and all the new blood there, it's just a very exciting time, and I'm even more so. It's sort of like the less we know, half of me gets nervous and half of me gets excited. The less we know and the closer we get to Rogue One. So it's interesting. Well, we're still waiting, but I'm sure we'll get that trailer
soon.
Man,
I heard you talking about that on the last show, and I'm give us our trailer already.
Come
will
on.
You?
I know. All right. Kevin Reitzel, point people to, again, where they can find you online.
You can follow me on Twitter at Spartan_Phoenix. On Facebook, I'm Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. And then please check out the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes and Stitcher.
Absolutely will do. Kevin, thanks so much for stopping by the Star Wars Report and giving us your unique perspective on The Force Awakens, available on Blu-ray and digital download right now. Ladies and gentlemen, that puts another episode of the Star Wars Report podcast in the books. All right, there we go. Thank you, sir. Much appreciated. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Man, I kind of like this jam. I was playing it while I was getting ready to call him, and I just had to stick with it. Folks, man, like I said, that's another episode of the Star Wars Report podcast in the proverbial can. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Make sure that you stay in touch with us via email at StarWarsReport@gmail.com. StarWarsReport@gmail.com. Very easy to remember. Also, you can follow us on Twitter. It's at StarWarsReport. I'm also on Twitter. It's at The Riley Guy, R-I-L-E-Y, The Riley Guy. I appreciate you guys following me and starting a conversation and chatting in between episodes. It's always a great time on the old world of social media. And again, huge thanks. Speaking of social media, thanks to our guest, the lovely and talented and just generally amazing Vanessa Marshall, who is super, super awesome. Make sure you follow her on Twitter. It's at Van Marshall. Again, that's at Van Marshall. That's what you want to do. What to say? What to say? The Star Wars Blu-ray, Vanessa May. All right, I started off on a riff there. That's another episode in the can. Again, I really do appreciate everybody who listens to this program each and every week, and we do appreciate you, and we do especially, seriously, appreciate everyone who's supporting us on Patreon. You guys are making this stuff happen, so... And like I say, if you want to help and support the show as well, it's patreon.com/StarWarsReport. Or if you just want to get the word out about the show, tell a friend. Shoot a friend a link in an email and let them know that there's this weird Star Wars podcast. That's always a good way to do it. And, of course, as always, iTunes. StarWarsReport.com/iTunes takes you straight through. We've gotten a couple of new reviews, actually, so we really do appreciate those. Each week, getting some new reviews really helps us stay relevant, stay at the top of the ranks. Shares the show and lets more people see us as we become more visible. So we need that. We want to grow the community, and also we just want to thank you guys who are part of the Star Wars Report community. Some big things in the works. Some big things in the works. We got Celebration Europe coming up. I'm laying some plans. It's not a sure thing, but we'll see if it works out. There's a possibility myself or my sister Bethany or both, maybe, you never know, will be in London. So that'll be a good time. And just good times to be had. Good times to be had. It's never been a better time to be a Star Wars fan. May the Force be with you guys. And until next time, remember, I feel like we need the jam.
Many boffins died to bring you this podcast.
Yeah, they did. Many boffins died. Many, many, many boffins died.